So Ben, we've got you, and you've had a busy day. It's Mother's Day today, and you've been busy.
Yeah, super busy. So running a flower nursery. I mean, we had International Women's Day on Monday just gone, and then Mother's Day today. So it's been full on week of just organising. But it's sort of nature, right? So we're not in full season yet. So we do millions of stems through the whole year, with spring and autumn being when we're doing like tens of thousands of stems a week. But we're not there yet. You know, the crop is still coming out of the winter growing mode. So it's just sort of, yeah, good customer service, just saying to people, you know, we've not got enough yet, and then juggling things and making everyone happy as best you can. So that's been the week. Yeah.
I mean, so what's it been like working in a flower? It's Crosslands Flower Nursery where you work, isn't it, in near Arundel?
Yeah, so I'm fourth generation. So my great grandparents started in 1936, and Crosslands Flower Nursery, yeah, we're still rocking. We're still going in 2021. So it's very rare in farming, but even rarer in the cut flower trade that we're still doing business and still surviving, you know. So
and how's it been? I'm sorry to talk about, you know, lockdown and COVID and all that, but how's it been through that? I mean, obviously,
it's been amazing.
Really?
It's been incredible because it's been a combination. We've always had natural sort of phenomenon and disasters and whatever. So you may have heard of the ash cloud. When we had the big ash cloud, that stopped a lot of food, flowers, products coming into the country.
Of course, yeah.
Then obviously we've had the pandemic, and in lockdown one, I didn't realise, but China own a lot of the shipping routes around the world, and obviously they were making big bucks by selling their PPE because we didn't have enough, did we? I mean, now we see masks in the oceans and in our streets and on the street and just causing littering everywhere. But there was a time when, you know, doctors and nurses didn't even have PPE. We've come a long way, haven't we? To just littering the place with them, and we couldn't get them before. So yeah, China, instead of sending us flowers, food, clothes and so on, all of the shipping containers contain PPE, so that stopped a lot of the imported flowers coming in. So yeah, it's been like Mother's Day every day of the week since lockdown one. And obviously flowers themselves, you know, if it's your anniversary, you're missing some people, you know, life goes on. People are still having birthdays, anniversaries, getting married, doing stuff. They want to say, I'm thinking of you, even though I can't be there. And flowers are one of those things that you can say that with it. And I mean, before the pandemic, I had under 1,000 IG followers, and now I've got over 5,000, which still isn't a lot, but you can just see quickly how people, their heads are more up, their eyes are more up, their minds are more open, and they're trying to support more local, more British growers and farmers. So all in all, apart from obviously not going to live music and seeing my mates, it's been a positive. It's been a huge positive. Yeah,
amazing. I mean, like, and I suppose a lot of people have got into gardening, haven't they? A lot of people have got into sorting their own, you know, people sort their own houses out, but also spent a lot of time in the garden, so they're probably been working hard on that.
Yeah, so there's this hashtag grown not flown. So we'll probably get into it later or now if you want, but over 90% of flowers in the UK are now imported, and obviously the carbon footprint of that is redonkulous, you know. And we use the hashtag grown not flown because a lot of things are obviously flown in as well as shipping containered in. So yeah, everyone's been getting really stuck in and growing their own fruit and veg and flowers and everything if they've had a garden, or even if not, just growing them in pots in their kitchens or whatever. And houseplants, I think, have seen a real boom as well. So yeah, definitely. And there's scientific papers on it, you know. I mean,
yeah, it's good for the air.
Agriculture is good for the air, but it's good for the soul, the mind. I mean, people just stuck indoors, I mean, to freshen up the place with some flowers and some plants is it's only a good thing. So
my day job is a teacher, and there was even a study done into the impact of having, you know, flowers and plants in classrooms and what that does for learning, you know, just in terms of if you've just got walls to look at, you're not very inspired, are you? Whereas if you've got, you know, beautiful, pretty, natural things, then you tend to be more engaged and more energetic and more inspired to do things.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously been very blessed to, you know, born and grow up on the flower nursery. And in the country, you know, we've got fields and woodland and the big greenhouses with all the Alstroemeria plants in and flowers. So I've always been surrounded by it. And I did marine biology for over 10 years, studied it and worked it. So I knew even from a young kid I wanted to help the planet and do my little bit. That's what I wanted to do, you know. So I've been very lucky from a very young age that it's in my blood, it's in my soul, and it's what I want to do. It's my passion, you know.
Amazing. Well, so that's certainly lucky. Certainly, you know, getting that from you, that level of passion. And I mean, spotted on your socials the shirt you're wearing, British Flowers Rock, and I thought that was pretty cool. And now you've said about live music, that's obviously something you're into as well. So, and you mentioned Alstroemeria. I mean, before this conversation, I knew nothing about that, so maybe we could explore that a bit and talk a little bit about why it's important to look after, you know, native plants.
Yeah, so I mean, Alstroemeria, also known as Peruvian lily or lily of the Inca, because the seed originates from Peru and Chile, likes living naturally halfway up the Andes. And the seed was sort of brought back. And in the UK, we've only been growing it really since the 1960s, 1970s. And it's a very sustainable crop to grow in the UK. So it's known as a cool crop. So it obviously looks cool in your arrangements and in your vases. But by a cool crop, we mean it doesn't take much heat for it to be productive in greenhouses. So when Grandad was sort of running the show here, oil prices was about 8p a litre for oil, you know. Called it black water, you know. Now it's about 88p a litre, but actually with the pandemic the oil was half price, it was about 40p a litre. So again, another sort of positive really. So it was the rising oil prices. So obviously a little bit of history: when my great grandparents started, they started because it was a government initiative called the Land Settlement Association. So we had the Great Depression here in the UK in the 1930s. A lot of miners, a lot of ship builders out of work. There wasn't the benefit system like there is today. So back then the government set up over 20 areas around the UK where unemployed families would go and work and farm the land. And Chichester near me was the largest one of these colonies, these settlements. And there was about 140, 150 small holdings set up. And my great-grandparents, Albert and Louisa, were one of the original families that signed on the dotted line and moved from Abertillery to Siddlesham here. And they took the government up on the initiative. Then my granddad joined them after World War II. He met my nana, who was a Pompey girl, a Portsmouth girl down the road. Had my dad, uncles and aunties over in Siddlesham near Chichester. And then we moved here to Crosslands in 1957. Again, it's a whole other talk, but you can type in Land Settlement Association Siddlesham into YouTube and there's loads of black and white videos of them picking tomatoes, packing eggs, tomatoes, veggies, and that would all get sent to Covent Garden. And then back then, Waitrose, Tesco's, all that, they used to go into the markets, collect all the homegrown produce, and that's how we lived. We were very sustainable as a country. We didn't rely on beans from Kenya and strawberries from Israel and Egypt. You know, we ate and lived very seasonally and sustainably. So that's sort of a brief history of Crosslands Flower Nursery. And then, as I say, we started specialising in the Alstroemeria in the 60s and 70s because oil prices were on the way up. So it was seen as a good alternative crop to grow because you didn't need to heat at high temperatures. So the optimum temperature through a winter night is only 13 degrees. Whereas if you're growing tomatoes, salad crops, you need 20 degrees, you know. And it's also known as a dry crop in UK, so we only water 20 minutes once a month in the winter, 20 minutes once every 10 days in the summer. So it's a very sustainable crop, also in the fact that we only replant less than 5% of the crop a year. So we've got hundreds and hundreds of rows and beds of the crop, the Alstroemeria, but we only replant 6 or 7 beds a year. So, you know, when you add all of that up, plus it's a British product going to British people, the carbon footprint is very, very low because we don't even burn oil anymore. In 2013, I did a 2-year project converting the oil system over to biomass. Right, so we burn the little wooden pellets because we've got Goodwood and Slindon estates near me where there's a lot of trees that need to be managed. People have got this thing, well, if you plant loads of trees, you're saving the world. No. because if you plant trees where they're not meant to be, you're going to ruin the habitat. And trees are just big plants. They're going to die eventually, and they need managing and controlling. So, you know, they need to be spaced out properly. They need to be managed. So all of that managed wood goes into these little wooden pellets, and that's what we burn to heat our greenhouses now, as well as obviously having solar panels for the electric for our chillers and storage. We're pretty sustainable.
Truly sustainable effort, isn't it? And you've obviously given a lot of thought. I mean, was that your doing, or was that your sort of parents doing, you know, exploring all of this and putting that into place?
I think every generation has had their input. There's like a legacy of, like, we've still got the old World War II secondhand oil-fired boilers that Granddad put here in the 50s as backup, you know. And then Dad, in the 90s, he bought a big processing machine that after we've graded flowers into, again, we've got what everyone's heard of, the War on Waste, the Hugh Fearnley sort of initiative. The War on Waste talks about clothes and bread and beer and food and so on, and the wonky veg and everything, but flowers, we get left off these programs all the time. It's a £2 billion industry within the UK, you know. But we grade the flowers, so we have a wonky styly bunch of flowers, and we have a premium grade bunch of flowers, and the wonky stuff is absolutely fine for people's vases at home. So that's what we supply the public, direct to the public. You know, they get four big bunches of the posy grade delivered to their door, and they last for 2 or 3 weeks, and no one ever complains that they're not 22.1 grams each a stem. They're a bit gnarly, they're a bit wonky, because the actual quality of flower is just as good as if it was on a massive long chunky stem that someone's going to cut you shorter anyway, you know. So it's down to all that. And obviously we use a lot of the time we don't use any packaging, because people collect the raw product direct from the nursery, and we use reusable boxes and recyclable boxes and packaging as well. And that's all come from me, I think, just because of the marine biology, and I've always been interested in doing things sort of as best I can. And we don't use any pesticides or insecticides anymore. We use what you call biocontrol. So we use biology to kill other biology. So there's little critters called incarsia that feed on whitefly. And then there's called companion planting, or banker plants. So sporadically through the greenhouses, we grow tomatoes, courgettes, cucumbers, aubergine plants. And they'll basically attract pests off of flowers onto those plants, and then the incarsia will gobble them all up. So it's using techniques like that instead of just spraying with chemicals that we combat pests in an environmental way.
That's brilliant.
It's all good.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a return to this, isn't there, in many ways? This kind of move from, you know, industrial grade farming and things like that to you know, to using nature, basically, in many different ways. I know that you know, I mean, the thing you talk about is this, we call the three sisters as well, which is the way that you plant a certain crop, which allows the other to grow. So everything kind of, it's just kind of a circular economy, I suppose. So everything
kind of feeds into everything. That's it.
The permaculture stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those banker plants, those companion plants. It's kind of like that, where we're attracting the pest into one zone and then letting the natural biocontrol sort of feed on it, you know. But even though, as I say, we're one of the larger flower growers left in the country, we do our best, you know, even down to things like, if we get a delivery of something here on the nursery, I'll reuse that packaging that I've just received in that consignment, and I'll keep it and I'll use that for my packaging. And locally, florists, they'll save up their imported flower boxes that would otherwise go in the bin, and once a month I go around all the forest collecting all the boxes, and I use those boxes for my flowers. You know, my flowers don't come in a logoed Crosslands Flower Nursery box with some leaflets and pamphlets and business cards, and they arrive in like an Ecuadorian or Colombian or Cambodian flower box, and people, as soon as they lift up the lid, they know they're my flowers, you know. And they actually like the fact that what they're about to put in their bin in their home is come from Ecuador or Colombia or Cambodia. It's not been made and stuff in Britain, so I've used it to literally the nth degree, you know. So
Do you think people are bothered about that anymore? Because there used to be this perceived value, wasn't there, in sort of having logos and having pamphlets and having, you know, the paraphernalia and all that. I don't know. Do you sense that's changing now, that people aren't that bothered about that stuff anymore?
Yeah, I mean, my customers, they love the traceability. They can obviously go onto our Crosslands Facebook page or look me up on Twitter and IG at Ulstromeria Ben, and they know, they can see me. There's videos of the biocontrol. There's videos of me on a day-to-day in my IG stories, what I'm doing. You know, and that's not really causing much. You know, they can get all the information direct to me, so they're seeing the product planted, grown, processed, packed, and then it's at their door within the space of 2 days. And if they've got a problem or a query, or they just want some more information about it, they can just DM me or email me, and that's a lot more personal than just whacking in a brochure or a pamphlet or something in a logoed box, because they do appreciate, you know, what we're,
it's how really
sustainable we're trying to be.
Yeah.
So when you buy from Ulstromeria Ben, it is me, Ben, who is doing everything, and they like that, you know. So
it's real.
Yeah. It literally is, they're like, wow, that was in your greenhouse yesterday. You know, that's like come out of Ben's green, you know, and it's not been flown around the world for 5 weeks, because when we supply supermarkets, we have to give a 5-week forecast, because it takes that long flowers to go from, I don't know, Cambodia, Colombia, Kenya, and it all goes into Holland, because that's where everything goes before it comes into the UK, because from Great Yarmouth to Europe, that's the shortest bit of water. So then it goes from Holland to Great Yarmouth, then it will come to Great Yarmouth, then it will go into the Midlands, where all the supermarket pack houses are, and then it will get funneled down, and then to a middleman, to a florist, to your friend, and then into your home, and the flowers might last a week. I mean, it's absolutely mental, isn't it? It's insane that the amount of carbon gone into that, and it lasts a week. I mean, if you buy, I don't know, a car from Germany or a jumper from China, yes, it's pretty bad, but at least the car's going to last you 10 years and the jumper's going to last you five years or something. But for such a fleeting thing like flowers, I think it's insane. Yeah. When you add up all the times the product's been handled and loads of chemicals used and so on, and freezers and fridges and, oh, the electric, and To put like a little camera or something in one of these flower bunches from Colombia, it would be quite something to see how many times it's taken in and out of different areas. And
and it's you know, with you speaking now, I'm just running through that process. It's something that, you know, in my ignorance, I've not really considered. You sort of know, but just the fact that you've said those places and made it real in a story, it makes more sense, and you can see how ridiculous and wasteful it is. So I suppose imagine, you know, you're a consumer and you want to buy flowers. What is it that you would recommend for people to do if they wanted to go out and buy a bunch of flowers, or if they wanted to go and do something they didn't want to have all of this kind of, you know, carbon footprint and all of this transporting and shipping stuff around the world? And what would you recommend that people do?
Yeah, if they don't want that on their conscience.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. But they should feel that. People should feel, you know, it's just like with Jamie Oliver, you know, the school dinners and the battery hen eggs. And, you know, when we go into a supermarket now, most generations were educated to buy seasonal, buy free range eggs instead of battery hen eggs. We're all told to cook whole fish instead of fillet of fish, and we're looking for that sustainable fish logo. We're looking for Scottish lamb instead of New Zealand lamb. We're all geared up now. It's not because the supermarkets wanted that, it's because the supermarkets have been pressured by top chefs to, they've educated the public, and the public have gone, nah, this is wrong, man, this is not good, surely something better can happen. And these changed food, there's a long way to go with food, but it's come a long way. With flowers, we're 20, 30 years behind, just in terms of product placement and labeling. So at the moment, we've just had Mother's Day is today, so when listeners hear this, we've just had Mother's Day, and most supermarkets, it will just say Mother's Day bouquet, £10. It yeah. won't say what chemicals are on the flowers, what chemicals are on the packaging. It won't say when it was harvested, where it was harvested, where it was packaged. Nothing. It will just say the price, and it won't even say what types of flowers generally are in the bunch. But with, for example, bacon, it can no longer be called British bacon. If it was just packed in Britain, it would say Danish bacon packed in Britain. And that's a standard law in all supermarkets. But even within supermarkets, one supermarket, so the same chain, if we talk about the same chain of supermarket, one of their stores, the flowers can be labelled differently to another one of their stores. And yeah, it's just not good enough. So as I say, for listeners, you can just buy direct from the grower, like me, you know, hit me up and I'll supply you directly. Or it's really sketchy, as I say, the labelling in supermarkets, but we do have seasonal flowers. So we've obviously just had the daffodils and the tulips, and we supply a Morrison's supermarket. So if you ever see British Ulstermere Morrison's, they'll be mine. But as I say, we used to supply Sainsbury's, and they used to have a picture of my uncle on the sleeve in the 90s, and a bit about Crosslands Nursery. And, you know, it's a really nice label, you know, it gave you some good information. And then they got rid of that, which my uncle was quite happy about because he got fed up of seeing his face in the Sainsbury. But they just put the Union Jack on, you know. So it was okay. It wasn't good, but it's a step down. And then about 2 years ago on the Ulstermere and Sainsbury's, it said grown in Colombia / UK. Grown in Colombia / UK. They were just putting my product Colombian. Saving more ink, more time, making more money. And the writing was on the wall because I got a phone call Valentine's Day in 2020, and the Sainsbury's got that one of their middlemen to phone me, and they said, "Ben, we don't want your flowers now. We can get 4p cheaper a bunch from Colombia." So crazy, that just shows you the degradation and how bad labelling is actually. That's a good example of how labelling has actually got worse recently in flowers instead of going the other way like food. So it's very tricky.
Would it be safe to say that, you know, shopping local, using florists, using, you know, individuals and small local companies is the way forward, rather than heading into a supermarket, unless you're going to Morrison's?
if you've only got a supermarket, it's, you can still buy direct from someone like me, who it's next day delivery. I mean, it's a good service, I think, you know.
So
you get a fresh product that's going to last 2 or 3 weeks in your home or whatever. And we've done a lot of that this Mother's Day. A lot of it has been direct to the public. And we also do supply farm shops and florists. So if you're in a town or a village with a florist, you can go in there and say, "Oh, have you checked out Ben? You know, he's, you know, can we get some of his flowers into the community?" And that's what the British Flowers Rock campaign has done. I do over 50 talks a year up and down the country, and after my talk, people will take one of my cards, or they'll take a bit of information, they'll go to their local veggie shop, farm shop or florist. The next day I get a phone call from that farm shop or florist, and we start supplying the community. And actually, the farm shops and florists, they're like, "Ben, this is great, can you send us more? People are really lapping this up."
That's because brilliant,
because it's getting that community feel back, you know, into the flowers. So we all missed our bakers and our butchers and our fishmongers, and they're all coming back now, whether they're mobile units or they're, for example, a lot of farm shops near me have now got in-house bakeries. It's all come back again, you know, where people want that fresh sourdough bread on a Sunday morning, ready for, you know, Sunday and stuff like that. So again, food and flowers, it should be thought of in the same realm in our brains. Whenever we go and purchase flowers and food, it should be thought about exactly the same. Because even with flowers, there's more probably packaging in the flower industry than there is in the food industry and clothes industry. You think of all the little cable ties, all the little netting over each individual bud, and the sachets of flower food and the chemicals in that sachet of flower food, and the sellotape attaching that sachet the bunch of flowers. You start racking that all up, loose bananas in a boat, you know, compared to flowers coming from... There's got to be more. I would say it's on par at least with food, the amount of packaging used that the end user doesn't get to see, because through all of that process, all of the netting, all of the cable ties, all of that, it's all taken off of the product before you, the end user, sees it. It's a bit like clothes that go around the world. so much packaging, but you just see it on a lovely hanger with a label on. I think that's, you know, people are, you know, can think like that sometimes. Think, oh, that's how it's on the hanger. That's how it arrived in the country. No, it was in a big box full of packaging and polystyrene or whatever they use sometimes. So it's the same with flowers. So, yeah.
Definitely. No, there's a lot of food for thought here, sorry. And it's, I think, you know, as a consumer, I think it's always good to question, isn't it? It's always good to question where the origin is, where it's come from, how it's got there, and what it's been packaged in, because it just allows you to make more informed choices and more informed decisions there. And it means you might have to pay 4p more a bunch, or even 10p more a bunch, or even 50p more a bunch, but it's, you know, it's the right thing to do. And I think if you can go with that, the right thing to do, that's sort of the best thing to do. A question I did want to ask is, there's obviously been a huge development and interest in growing your own stuff, and I know that even a few of my friends and the, you know, the community organization we've got, Circularity itself, we've got two allotments now that we're running community groups, or at least will be when a lot of the restrictions lift. Where do you start? Say you're listening to us speaking now, and you've never really grown anything before, but you listen to what we're saying and go, actually, I'm going to start thinking a little bit more about buying, you know, a little bit more consciously about buying local and buying, you know, native, if you like, to the UK. But I'd love to have a go grow my own. Where do you start? I know that's a big question, but
yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I grow loads of stuff sort of as a hobby, as well. So obviously we do millions of stems of Ustramaria, you know, but not everyone's got 4 acres of biomass sustainably heated greenhouses in their backyard, you know. But it's YouTube now is the way to go. Obviously there's this no dig method at the moment, where you have a raised bed with a layer of cardboard, then your soil, and then get growing. So you can YouTube no dig method, which is really sustainable, but yeah, just use YouTube. But I would always sort of start on a small scale, obviously. So if you've got a massive area, well, don't just do it all at once. Start with a little area and spread yourself out, because again, you hear stories that people with big gardens, they grow all this veg, but then they chuck it all away. So it's like the war on waste gets worse, you know, because they grow all this stuff and they're like, ah, what do I do with it after I've given it to a few neighbours and whatever, what do I do with it? So, yeah, but even if you don't have a garden, you can grow things in pots in a courtyard garden, or even just having houseplants or growing herbs on your kitchen windowsill, like growing some chilies and some thyme and basil and sage and all that. You know, get into herbs. Herbs are used in everyday cooking, so definitely get into that. And also, I'm a big fan of foraging as well. I go on a lot of foraging courses in Brighton area, and again, you'd be amazed at the wild garlic and the mushrooms and so on that's just littered around. That, you know, even near me, people have got apple trees and they just go to waste. Yeah, you know, it's just simple stuff like that. But yeah, for listeners, just check out YouTube and get on it. Yeah. So yeah. And people can always message me on social media if they have questions or sort of directions on what they're growing. But I grow all sorts of things, from blueberries, raspberries, rhubarbs, beetroot. You know, it's all doable on a small scale, for sure. Yeah,
definitely. So I mean, just while we're on that, what are your socials, because they're all the same across different, are they all the addresses? Yes.
So Twitter and IG is at Ustramaria Ben, and Crossland, if you type in Crosslands Flower Nursery into Facebook, and you can hit us up there as well. So we're on those three. And I've just literally been on Clubhouse, which is where I met you, for just over 3 weeks. I've been on that now, and I think you can type in Ben Cross or Ustramaria Ben onto Clubhouse, and listen to me or see what rooms I'm going into. And yeah, I've loved that.
It's different, isn't it? 3 weeks. Some more human connections with people I've found on there, and
it's really nice. Cool, because this is probably about the sixth or seventh collaboration I've done with someone in just over 3 weeks off of that app. Whereas
really?
On Facebook, Twitter, and IG, I have done collabs like YouTube guest spots, podcasts, things like this, but only maybe 20 or 30 in 5 years or something. So yeah. It's been really
it's opened stuff up, hasn't it?
It's been really open and positive, and you sort of meet like-minded people, and they do follow up. Whereas before, people have sort of said, "Oh, yeah, do you?" And you're like, "Yeah, yeah, definitely want to do that." You email them, and then it just peters out and fizzles out. Whereas with Clubhouse, everyone's sort of on it and wants to help each other out. And I guess I don't know when we sort of get back to normal in June 21 here, if. You know, I mean, for example, I don't think I'll be on the app as much because in my evenings, hopefully I'll be out about in Brighton and enjoying myself. But at the moment, it's been a really good tool to use of an evening, just logging on and seeing what cool rooms are open and finding gems of people like you, Chris, that just
nice one.
That get it and collab straight away. It's really, really, it's been really cool. Yeah,
nice one. No, that sounds really good. And I suppose we can sort of... end on this, really. You know, you said a little bit about what's next for you, but what do you hope to achieve over say the next year or so? What are you looking to do?
Well, we don't have enough flowers anymore. I'm renting some more glass off my uncle's, and I'm even selling out of that. So we're looking at extending the greenhouses that we've got, and we're looking at putting in some more solar panels. Instead of actually being in survival mode, we can now, after the last year, see we're getting more people interested in what we're about, and we might be actually able to say we can grow as an entity instead of always being in this survival mode against the imports. So it's I'll just keep positive, keep rocking the British Flowers Rock campaign, and gathering momentum and support for it, because without the support, it's nothing. And I've been overwhelmed by the public and people that I've met that have really, they've got it, understood it, and not only that, but they support it. You know, it's been immense, really.
Fantastic. Well, all the best for the upcoming time of building and growing and all of that sort of stuff. And I'll see you on Clubhouse at some point.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris. Nice one.
Thanks, Ben. Take care, man.